Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Wednesday, October the 27th. It's about 9 in the morning in Toronto, and I am speaking with Dubai-based lawyer Virginia Latoura Jeeker, and I think it's still the same day, but much later in the day. What time is it in Dubai, Virginia?
Hi, John. It's 4:51 p.m. here.
Oh, my God. So it's getting towards the end of your day, the beginning of my day. And I thank Virginia for joining me today. We've had a number of podcasts over the years and continuing on. And what we're actually going to talk about today is, I was talking to Virginia a couple of days ago and comparing notes, and each of us seemed to be getting an awful lot of questions about when you renounce U.S. citizenship, you know, what does that mean to your Social Security? Can you still get U.S. Social Security? Does the fact of renunciation somehow impact that? Does it mean that it gets cut off? Is there something about the way a renunciation is done that could mean that it would be cut off? And, you know, obviously creating an awful lot of anxiety. So today, Virginia and I are going to address these issues, hopefully with a goal of defusing a bit of that renunciation anxiety. So welcome, Virginia, and how are you today?
I'm doing great, John. And I'm happy that you and I are going to discuss this today, because I've been seeing an awful lot of articles and podcasts and so forth about renunciation, and the amount of misinformation I am finding in these articles and podcasts is mind-boggling, and I can understand why people are getting very anxious when they listen or read these things.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And I mean, we will at the end of this go over a list. Why don't we talk about some of the areas of extreme anxiety, just to kind of flag them before we get started with the Social Security issue today, where we're going to focus. But I mean, you know, we've done a podcast before, for example, about the Reed Amendment and this whole notion of people being barred from the United States if they renounce U.S. citizenship. Do you want to just sort of reinforce our conclusion on that?
Right. Well, as I recall, we did a podcast on that some months back, and things have not changed since that podcast. I am not seeing people being denied entry into the United States who have renounced. I think people who are thinking of giving up their U.S. citizenship have to understand that this so-called Reed Amendment is part of the immigration and nationality laws. It is not part of the US tax code. So this strictly has to do with the immigration rules. And the issue there is whether the individual who has renounced his US citizenship can be banned from re-entering the United States. Under the immigration laws, there is a very ambiguous provision that says if the person has a tax motivated reason for giving up his U.S. citizenship, then he can be denied re-entry. However, this amendment to the laws came in 1996, and regulations were never issued to expand upon it or explain to the immigration authorities what they should look for to determine if someone had a tax-motivated reason for expatriating. Because of the lack of any guidance, the question of whether this Reed Amendment is even constitutional has come up many, many times. And to my knowledge, it has only been enforced literally a handful of times to deny someone entry when the immigration division did have some kind of clear proof that the person had given up his U.S. citizenship for a tax-motivated reason. Perhaps the person said something during an interview that they gave up because they were sick and tired of paying U.S. taxes. I don't really know, but we have not, in my practice, I've never seen it. Speaking to my colleagues, they haven't seen this provision being invoked by the immigration authorities. However, people have to understand that when they apply for a visa to enter the U.S., or they're going to the U.S. under a 90-day visa waiver program, that they may never really learn the reason if they're denied entry. That the government doesn't have to give you a reason. So So if someone is an expatriate who has expatriated, if he is a so-called covered expatriate who under the US tax laws is treated as having a tax avoidance motive, it may be possible the immigration division finds out about that tax side, but they should not, because the government agencies are not allowed to share that information unless the taxpayer agrees to waive his rights to his tax privacy and send the information to the immigration division. So really, how the immigration division can find this out is beyond me. I don't think people should really be worrying about this. If they are covered expatriates, they may have more of a concern. But again, covered expatriates are just for US tax purposes. We don't know that the immigration side means someone will be treated as having a tax motivated reason just because he's treated as a covered expatriate for tax purposes. Does that make sense to you?
You know what? It certainly makes sense to me, but you know, you and I are lawyers and we think about this constantly. Let me ask you a real simple question for the listeners. Have you personally ever had a client barred from the US because of the RIA?
No.
You're very well connected in the world of renunciation lawyers, Virginia. Do you know any renunciation lawyer you know personally who has told you they've had a client who's been denied admission to the US because of the Reed Amendment?
Nope.
I think that's probably good enough. That should not be a concern.
I think it's a very, very slight concern. And if people understand the way the laws work, they will understand why it should be a slight concern. However, some professionals are using this threat of possible barring from the U.S. as some kind of scare tactic to get, I believe, to get clients to use them because they think they have some kind of magic formula, which they don't, to prevent this from ever happening. So I think, you know, buyer beware. You have to be very careful about what you're reading and understand what's behind perhaps some of the articles or podcasts that you may come across on the internet.
Well, I think there's no question about that, but, you know, sort of in closing this chat, this part of the podcast, why don't we just, would you agree with me if I were to say that during a renunciation interview, if you're asked why you're renouncing, the answer that you would not want to give is, well, to avoid U.S. taxation.
Clearly, that is not the answer you want to give.
Exactly. But, you know, that's...
By the way, many of my clients, the vast majority of them, do not have the U.S. tax system in their mind as the reason for expatriation. Okay, they've lived outside of the United States for most of their lives. They've started a business overseas and been very happy for the past, let's say, two or three decades living abroad. They're finding it very difficult to manage their financial lives, their married lives, et cetera, because of the conflicts of laws that they are faced with being a US citizen and a citizen of another country. So really the clients I'm dealing with, US tax is not the forefront of their reasons for expatriation.
I agree with you totally. It is.
Many are not even subject to US tax. Okay, so. There you go.
Yeah, they're not renouncing for tax reasons. They're renouncing so they can live a normal life in the countries where they live with the same opportunities as citizens and residents of those countries. That's why they're renouncing.
Exactly.
But in any case, that particular issue, the Reed Amendment, is, I think, actually a very easy myth to dispel. I think it's an easy issue to deal with. What I really want to explore with you today, which I think is mostly also easy, but there are some nuances to it, is the whole issue of U.S. Social Security and what happens to entitlement to U.S. Social Security if one were to renounce U.S. citizenship. And it seems to me a good starting point for the discussion, since we're asking what happens to the entitlement to it, would be what exactly does entitle you to U.S. Social Security anyway? Under what circumstances would you receive a check from them?
I think that The simplest answer to that is when someone qualifies based on their own work record, that they have 40 quarters of Social Security, let's say, credits.
Pay-ins.
Would that be a good word?
About pay-ins. Yes.
Pay-ins, right. So they've been paying in for a total of 40 quarters. And once you have done that, I think that the basic answer is yes, you are entitled to your Social Security. And if you renounce your US citizenship, that is not impacting your entitlement.
Okay, so in other words, once entitled, sort of always entitled. Now, can we just expand that a little bit? You know, we talk about this 40 quarters. Let's imagine a situation of somebody who has 20 quarters working in the United States, but then moves to Canada for the next 20 quarters of their lives and pays into the Canadian system. Does that person qualify as having 40 quarters, 20 plus US, 20 in Canada?
Well, here's where this issue of something called a totalization agreement comes into play. So the United States has entered into certain agreements called totalization agreements, which are basically like treaties, with 30 different countries in order to take care of the situation where an individual is maybe in the exact position you have explained. He's worked and earned 20 quarters in the US, and then he moves to Canada and works earning 20 quarters under the Canadian retirement system. So the totalization agreement will want to be able to combine the two 20 quarter sections that this person has in order to give him full eligibility for the 40 quarter period. The totalization agreement is just trying to help the individual who is working and paying into a Social Security system outside of the United States. And that particular totalization agreement will spell out the rights and obligations of the person who's involved and what the country can tax, which country can tax the payments, and so forth.
Okay. So, you know, to keep the example very simple, a U.S. citizen gets the first 20 quarters in the U.S., moves to Canada for 20 quarters, and then moves back to the United States. That person could collect Social Security in the United States based on the impact of the totalization agreement, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So now I would say, by the way, for listeners that we're hitting the key points and we're hitting them correctly. Okay. But each of these points, you know, you can find sort of a U.S. government publication that explains this type of stuff. And they have a particularly good one, I think, on the totalization agreements. It's interesting to me that how few countries the United States actually has totalization agreements with. But in any case, okay. So now we have a U.S. citizen who is eligible for Social Security, either because of the 40 quarters in the United States or because 40 quarters based on U.S. plus a totalization agreement. And let's say, first of all, that let's just add this in. If that U.S. citizen were to move outside the United States, leaving aside the renunciation issue, which many U.S. citizens do, to, say, Mexico, all right, or anywhere else, they continue to receive their Social Security payments, correct?
That's right. That's right.
And they're just, they just file a U.S. tax return, and they're just taxed as income in the appropriate way on the U.S. return, correct?
That's correct. The only thing I would caveat is the U.S. cannot send Social Security payments to certain countries. North Korea, for example, is one of them. I think Iran was the other one.
Cuba.
Cuba, thank you. So if you've moved to one of those countries, then you can't get your Social Security payment sent there. And I believe you may lose it for the time period you are living in those countries. There are other countries where the U.S. cannot send the Social Security payment. There are certain, they can make certain exceptions, though, for eligible persons in those countries. And I believe when you leave that country, then and return to the U.S., you can get the credit back for the time you were living in that country and get the payments kind of caught up. So you don't completely lose them, they'll just be delayed. And those countries, there's about six of them, Azerbaijan, Belarus, Kazakhstan, and some of these other, Moldova. The U.S. government has a list of which countries they cannot send the payments to, but that you will eventually, if you move back to the U.S., you can catch up on those payments.
Okay, but as a general principle, they continue to be eligible for Social Security. It doesn't terminate the right to Social Security.
That's right.
In some small isolated instances, it may impact their ability to receive the checks.
That's right.
Okay. So that's the situation with U.S. citizens, who I think of as sort of retirees abroad. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, as we know, Virginia,
they're probably not going to Cuba or North Korea.
Right. And, that could be of significance, interestingly, for a Canada-U.S. dual citizen. A lot of Canadians seem to like it in Cuba. Whatever. Okay. I think that the message to some extent here is what we're giving you are the basic principles, but it's important to check this type of stuff out. Okay. Obviously.
Particularly right. It's very nuanced. And I would, just caution listeners to understand that you and I are not Social Security experts. This is not what we do. We are U.S. international tax gurus, so to speak. And Social Security is a complete different set of laws. It's not part of the Internal Revenue Code.
It's hugely complex. It's hugely complex.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
But it does, Social Security is impacted in these examples that we are raising now. We're going to go into the expatriation scenario, I'm sure. And people
absolutely
are very interested about their Social Security.
Yeah, let's go there now. So now, before we get into the issue of expatriation, I think it's probably worth having a consciousness of the following. There are many green card holders who arrive in the United States and work their whole career in the United States and never become U.S. citizens. They never have become U.S. citizens. Clearly, they're paying into Social Security. Virginia, does their lack of U.S. citizenship mean that somehow they're disentitled to Social Security?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so key point, I think the starting point here is that entitlement to Social Security is not, as a general principle, dependent on being a U.S. citizen. Would you agree with that?
That's correct. I would agree.
Okay, therefore, moving on now to expatriation, renunciation, there is no obvious reason why renouncing U.S. citizenship, that is ceasing to be a U.S. citizenship, would terminate social eligibility for Social Security. Agreed?
Agreed.
Okay. So I think we can say in fairly simple terms that for most people, most of the time, as a general principle, renouncing U.S. citizenship will have zero impact on entitlement to Social Security payments. Agreed?
I think that's right, John.
Okay.
What I think people have to, again, be very aware of is seeing articles and hearing podcasts where the author or presenter is saying something like, oh, you won't lose your Social Security if your renunciation is handled properly, if your renunciation process is done properly. Tying in this renunciation process having to be properly done, like there's a magic formula that exists out there to enable you to not lose your Social Security.
I would agree with that. You talk about a proper renunciation. I have trouble understanding what that even is. What would be an improper renunciation? Let's start with that. What would be an improper renunciation?
I have no idea.
What's a proper renunciation? I mean, before your clients go in to renounce, Virginia, do you say, don't forget to renounce properly?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's such a pro forma act when the person is renouncing. And the State Department, through its consulate, U.S. consulate or U.S. embassy, handles whatever needs to be done with taking the oath of renunciation and so forth. I think what people need to be aware of is, wow, renunciation can really have a very huge tax impact, not only on the person who's renouncing, but if later in life he's leaving gifts or bequests to U.S. individuals, then he's got to be very aware that his renunciation, if he ends up being this creature called a covered expatriate for U.S. tax law purposes, then there's going to be significant U.S. tax consequences to him. And as I said, any U.S. recipient of a gift or bequest from that individual. It could be that all of this talk of a properly handled renunciation is thinking in terms of the tax consequences, but the gist of what I'm hearing or reading in these kinds of articles or podcasts is not really making that clear. It sounds like there's some magic formula that can be applied, that if it's handled properly, you won't lose your Social Security. Well, the covered expatriate status has absolutely nothing to do with one's Social Security. So I don't see where the connection really is. I think it's just a lot of brouhaha to get people scared.
Well, maybe, you know, in the interest of clarity, perhaps we could put it this way. It's not the propriety of the renunciation. It's the effect of the renunciation.
From a U.S. tax perspective, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, why not sort of leave it at that? And of course, you know, in very bullet form, because that's not what we're here to talk about today, you know, you hopefully would want to renounce without being a covered expatriate. And if you are, you know, for two reasons, okay, one, because of exit tax issues, but secondly, because of the longer term problem of wanting to perhaps leave as a bequest assets to U.S. heirs, right? Those are the two broad areas of consideration.
Broad areas, that's right.
Okay. All right, so back then to the whole issue of renunciation and Social Security. Let's take the word renunciation out of it. Why don't we put it this way, okay? What's the effect of not being a U.S. citizen on receipt of Social Security? As a general principle, the answer is none. Mm-hmm. But we have in the last day or two uncovered, I think, some possible issues for some people. And I think that we could, if I can sort of summarize and then get you to provide more particulars, the issue is not whether you're a U.S. citizen. The issue is what country are you a citizen of? That seems That's to have true. An impact on this in certain circumstances.
When you are collecting your payments outside of the United States.
Right, when you're collecting your payments outside the United States. Would you say that's reasonably accurate or at least not inaccurate?
Yes, John, I would agree.
Okay. Now, could you help us from this point with sort of giving an example or a possible example or alerting listeners to the kinds of things that might create an issue here?
Okay, so we are looking for purposes of our discussion at the individual who qualifies based on his own, qualifies for Social Security based on his own work record. In other words, he's got the 40 quarters one way or another, and he's qualified to get Social Security at a certain age. When you are a U.S. citizen and you want to get your Social Security payments outside of the United States, it's quite easy to do, provided you're not in one of those countries we mentioned before where they cannot send the payment, okay? If you are not a United States citizen and you want to collect your payment outside of the United States, there are additional conditions that you have to meet. And these conditions look to the country of which you are a citizen. So, for example, according to the Social Security Administration information on their website, you will continue to get your Social Security payments from abroad if you're a citizen of one of the countries listed below, and they give you a list. And it includes, you know, many European countries, Austria, Belgium, it includes Canada, Chile, Czech Republic, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, yada, 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 and so forth and so on, Switzerland, the UK. So if you are a citizen of one of those countries, you can collect your Social Security from abroad, even though you have expatriated, provided you are living and residing in a country where they can send the payments.
Okay, so, can I pause you there for just 1 second, okay? Just to kind of highlight what you're saying, because this is not simple stuff, all right? It's not the fact of not being a U.S. citizen, the renunciation. It's a question of where does it leave you in terms of what citizenship you have. Would that be correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so that's what's important.
John, like the example, for example, of your green card holder who went to the U.S., who worked there for 20 years, who then leaves to return to his home country, maybe it's the Netherlands, and he's a citizen of the Netherlands, and he goes, let's just say he's a citizen of the Netherlands, but he's doesn't like being in the cold, so he says, you know what? I want to hang out in Dubai, and I want to collect my Social Security. So he's not a U.S. citizen, but he is a citizen of one of the countries listed in this list that I've said to you. He's a citizen of the Netherlands, and he's hanging out in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, which is not one of the countries where the Social Security Administration cannot send payments. So he's cool. He's going to get his payments. It could be that guy. It could also be the guy who's renounced his U.S. citizenship. His remaining citizenship is as a Dutch citizen of the Netherlands, and he's hanging out in Dubai because he likes the sun. He can also still collect his Social Security payments. It has not been impacted because he has renounced his U.S. citizenship. There is no magic formula that some law firm or a tax advisory firm is going to be able to piece together to make sure this guy gets his Social Security payments, because he's going to be a citizen of whatever country he's a citizen of, and it will fit within this list that the Social Security Administration has put out there.
Yeah. You know, that is absolutely fascinating. And this seems to me something that people who are interested in acquisitions of second citizenships and people who are in the business of marketing second citizenship should probably be aware of, because there's tremendous growth. The U.S. is a huge growth market for people seeking second citizenships at the present
time.
That's
right.
I think for fairly obvious reasons. Okay. Now I'd like
John, let's just go back 1 second. Absolutely. You are correct. The person who is acquiring a second citizenship by investment, for example, let's say Dominica or Vanuatu, one of those fast and easy places to get citizenship. If he's got a lot of Social Security amounts that he's thinking about getting, and he's thinking about expatriating, he's really got to look into it. As I said, neither you nor I are experts in this. We've just picked up on this kind of fear-mongering aspect of certain tax articles or podcasts where, you know, they're trying to sell someone a magic bullet. There is really no magic bullet to my mind, okay? You've got to understand the law. Your carefully, properly handled renunciation, whatever that is not really going to impact where you are a citizen of as your remaining citizenship and whether you can collect your Social Security. I think for someone who is perhaps getting that second citizenship by investment, he may not be eligible to get his Social Security.
That is entirely possible. And this is, and you know, it's interesting because I know a lot of people in this space, and I'm actually a member of the Investment Migration Council. So, you know, this is something I do pay attention to. And I think that there's a real lack of awareness on this particular issue.
For example, St. Kitts and Nevis might work, because what's confusing to me in the Social Security website that you are going to be, I think, adding to this podcast for your listeners, you're going to add that link. It's very confusing as to which countries you can be a citizen of and still collect your benefits based on your own earnings history and where, you know, you can continue to receive your Social Security payments, provided you're a citizen of one of these listed countries. There's one list that's a shorter list, the one I referred to earlier. And then there's another list which contains a lot more countries, including, for example, St. Kitts and Nevis, which is a popular place for the person to take on his second citizenship, you know, citizenship by investment. So the individual who is going into these second citizenship programs really should be looking at the Social Security aspect if he's got a big stake of change in that system. Some people have not contributed to the system for many, many years, and they don't.
Well, for them, it's not an issue, but it is an issue for people with significant entitlements. And you know, for people who don't know, the U.S. Social Security system is actually, relative to many other countries, fairly lavish, I would say. Would you agree, mm-hmm. Virginia?
I don't know enough, John, to.
It's better than Canada, significantly better than Canada. Okay, I can tell you that, and that's interesting. So there is, for certain people, there is something at stake, but the vast majority of people are just simply going to continue to get Social Security when they renounce U.S. citizenship. But the final topic I think we need to talk about is how the transition from U.S. citizen to non-resident alien would affect the taxation of U.S. Social Security.
Okay.
So I think that puts you into 30% of 85% or something like that, doesn't it?
Yes. Generally speaking, the way you pay your tax, your U.S. tax on the Social Security amounts once you are a non-resident alien, if you have no other U.S. income that you need to report and file a tax return for, then all of your tax payments will be done by withholding. And you are correct. It's generally a 30% rate. And the 30% tax rate is imposed on 85% of your Social Security payment, not 100%. So it's 30% of 85%. And if you are residing in a tax treaty country where the rate may be lower, then you may reduce that to maybe 15% as opposed to 30% withholding rate. So
this is a very, very important point. Just to summarize, okay, for U.S. citizens, I guess it's 85% of the payment just goes on their tax return as taxable income, I think, right?
I think that's correct, yeah. John.
But if you become a non-resident alien, the taxable amount, that is 85%, is subject to a 30% U.S. tax, which is why a lot of what I would call U.S. retirees abroad are actually reluctant to get rid of U.S. citizenship, because it means that it might actually increase the U.S. tax paid on that. But this is, of course, as always, subject to treaty, and the way it's handled by treaty varies tremendously from treaty to treaty. For example, in Canada, it's just treated as Canada pension plan income the same way. So it just gets added to income. The U.S. doesn't tax it. Mm-hmm. And there are other countries where it will tax it, et cetera. So, you know, I think the final or an additional piece of the puzzle on this would be, what is the treaty, all right, between the country where you're going to be a tax resident of and the United States on this issue. So, you know, as we come to the end here, on the main point, renunciation is not a damn thing to do with you know, whether you get the Social Security or not. But boy, there are some other issues that can usefully be discussed.
And the well-advised, you know, person who's considering renunciation, who hears this from their advisor that, oh, we have to properly plan it so you can continue to get your Social Security, they've got to be looking at that person with a jaundiced eye. It's just not true.
Yeah, no, of course it's not true. It's not the loss of U.S. citizenship. It's where you're living, okay, and what country you're a citizen of that could impact this. And I think in closing here, in most cases, people in Canada, the U.K., what have you, the impact is little if nothing. Would you agree?
I think that's right, John. I think that's right.
Boy, that was fantastic discussion, Virginia. I think we probably ought to stop it here because I think we're just at the point where we've done something that's understandable and easily digestible. And
let's
I have a feeling if we say anything else, we may undo all the good work we've done in the last few minutes. What do you think?
I agree. Well, make sure you put the little link to the Social Security Administration brochure that I've sent you so that your readers can have a look at that and you know, at least it's a starting point for their
Absolutely, I'll do that. And I'll also put a link to our earlier podcast on the whole Reed Amendment issue. You know, the people are not going to be barred from the U.S., which I think was, another particularly good podcast. Yeah, all right. Well, this has been fantastic, as always. And I will get this up as soon as possible. Perhaps in closing, as is my custom, if you could alert people to your coordinates. I think everybody should read and subscribe to Virginia's blog, by the way. In my mind, Virginia, I think of Virginia as the world's favorite tax lawyer. Certainly the best retail tax lawyer out there in terms of her blog, which you all should subscribe to. But I'll let Virginia give the coordinates of that.
Sure. It's a blog that I post weekly with, quite detailed posts on international U.S. tax issues, many affecting the U.S. person living abroad, working abroad. I have a whole separate category of posts under expatriation. So check it out, www.us-tax.org. And I'm sure that you'll find many, many posts there of interest. And I may do a blog post on this, John, and include our podcast.
I think you absolutely should. This area is, what's interesting to me is in the world of renunciation, it's getting attention for precisely the wrong reasons.
That's right. And, I've not seen any proper discussion. I rarely see proper discussion of Social Security issues for the American abroad, totalization agreement issues. And this, anything I've seen has just been scaremongering. It's not particularly helpful in terms of giving the listener or the reader something to refer to, something to read up on. It's just saying your expatriation has to be properly planned and properly handled so you don't lose your Social Security. And as I hope we've dispelled that myth today, John.
No, I think we certainly have. And I thank you very much for this. All right. Well, this is great. And, we've done a very large number of videos and podcasts, Virginia. So I think I can safely say that, they end the James Bond movies. James Bond will be back. Virginia will be back.
Okay. I look forward to it, John.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye.